Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Studio Podcast. I'm Eric C. Jackson. I have a serious discussion that I'm going to start with, and it's going to have to turn into a series for this discussion on this topic because it's just the more research I do, the more information I find and I gather, the more I have something to, just the larger my opinion gets on it. I'm going to dive into the spike protein that is produced by the mRNA vaccine distributed by Pfizer and Moderna. And I'm really passionate about this because when the mandates began in the U.S., I was working for a government subcontractor. And so we were required to take the mRNA vaccine in order for us to keep our jobs. And they did give us time to, you know, make our decision. And my final decision turned out to be I didn't want to take the vaccine. I didn't quote religious reasons or anything like that. It was just the fact that I am not the most trusting of the medical industry, which doesn't mean that if I got seriously injured, I would definitely go to the hospital and get operated on if I had to. But in terms of, I guess I'll start by saying that once we realized COVID was spreading through the population in 2020, and March 2020, I got really sick. It's tough because my trust wasn't there in the medical industry. And once they named the program that they had, Operation Warp Speed is really what the government announced at that time. Once the government announced Operation Warp Speed, I just didn't like the name. I didn't see how a vaccine could be created or administered in such a record amount of time, especially because of the lack of long-term effects or side effects that we wouldn't know because everything would be, the vaccine would go off so quickly. Now, I do understand that we were told the mRNA technology has been around for decades, I heard, but I've just seen too much in the past that, I wouldn't say personal experiences, but really through family experiences and more specifically what happened to my mom leading up to when she passed away. Just my interactions with doctors and how they prescribe certain medications, and then there's side effects, and then there's long-term effects, not only from the medication directly with how you react to it, but taking prescribed medications over a long term, how it affects your liver. And like I said, just seeing what happened with my mom and then some other of my family members, I just decided that I would wait and see. I took a wait and see approach with what happened with the mandates. And so had several interesting conversations with my boss. My company actually brought in a doctor who gave us, I don't want to say a lecture, but just more of a breakdown of what the mRNA vaccine does and how it's distributed, that sort of thing. And even after, several attempts of my boss trying to convince me to take the vaccine, I still declined. And so by this time, I believe it was like December of that year. And then I think something happened with the courts. The deadline for the mandates was postponed because you had to take the vaccine by a certain date. And if you didn't, then you would lose your job. So that deadline got postponed, which means I stayed on the job. But this got me into looking for another place to work. And then even with that, I was running into companies saying that if you weren't vaccinated, you couldn't apply to that particular company. So that made everything, you know, more complicated. I guess long story short, I ended up leaving that job eventually after the mandates were, I guess the Supreme Court ruled they were unconstitutional. A few months after that, I left the job because I had gotten very sick. And the second or the third day that I called out, because I was calling in to let them know that I wasn't feeling well. The second or third day, the boss left me a voicemail saying that like someone at the company had COVID and I could have caught it from them. Which I didn't know that someone on staff had caught COVID. And we were all around each other, you know, a lot of the time. So it really wasn't that social distancing type thing. But yeah, I got really sick for about 2 weeks. And man, I felt bad. I hadn't felt that bad in about a year or so. Like March 2020, I got really sick. And I don't think that we had the vaccines then. But this time around, when I got really sick, was probably like February last year. I mean, like 2 weeks, it was just bad. Still decided not to take the mRNA vaccine. And by then, I had more information. I understood more about why I didn't want to take the vaccine. I just don't like the mRNA distribution of it. I don't like how it goes into our cells and creates a spike protein and then has our immune system attack the spike protein, that type of thing. I didn't like that part of it. And you really can't go to your boss and say, I have a bad feeling about this, right? Because that's not a legitimate excuse to not take the vaccine. According to certain companies, can have their own mandate, right? But yeah, so I left the job. I felt like it was just time for me to go. And I was still feeling pretty bad. So for the next couple of days, I just did everything I could, ate all the healthy stuff I could to build up my immune system. And at the same time, look for another place to work. And the new job, I got an interview and I told them that I wasn't vaccinated. And they said, well, right now we're not requiring it, but it could be something that happens in the future, right? Long story short, the end of this month will be a year that I've been working on a new job. It's a Fortune 500 company. Actually, it's a lot better than where I was before. So that's the blessing that came out of that. And issues with the vaccine haven't, you know, as far as a mandate from the company itself, it hasn't come up. So like I said, I'm in a much better situation than I was. But now I'm still looking at information as far as the vaccine. I'm curious about the spike protein. So I started pulling up all the information that I can. I'm just gathering information, all the information that I can about adverse effects, because it's very spotty. I'm not getting a lot of stuff from the mainstream media. So I'm going to independent channels and looking at what the doctors say and how they're going back and forth. Some doctors say one thing, some doctors say the total opposite. And so I found a few people, professionals, you know, experts that I feel like their heart is in the right place, where they have the same thing, where they're saying, well, I have a bad feeling about certain aspects of the mRNA distribution, and they've been doing their digging on it. So they can do this stuff much better than I can, of course. And what they are finding is really disturbing to me. And again, it's still not being talked about. I mean, we're February 2024 right now. So I'm going to share what I'm finding the best that I can. It's hours worth of discussion from these medical experts. But I think that the dialogue needs to begin, I guess... I'm just hoping to raise awareness. That's how I'm looking at it, because I'm definitely not an expert. And all of the medical terms that they're talking about, I'm learning this stuff as I go. And I'm teaching myself these things because the people who are in charge of giving us this information, including the CDC, I just feel like we're not being told what's going on. And so now the medical experts that are looking into it, they're having to take back channels and kind of the long way around to figure out what's going on, because we do have people having adverse events, and there has been a rise in deaths. People may be, you know, being misdiagnosed. So I'm one of the people that's trying to figure out what's going on, because I do have a lot of people that I know who have taken the vaccine, and they're much more trusting of the medical industry than I am. But I can't ignore what I'm seeing as far as what these researchers are finding. So thankfully some of these are getting put into peer-reviewed reports, right? And not just conspiracy theories. And I think that YouTube is allowing us to discuss these things more openly, even though we still have the COVID-19 disclaimer on a lot of these videos. But my main go-to is Dr. John Campbell. And I'm going to bring up his one of the main videos that I look at for him. Let me bring this up. And again, I'm going to have to break this up because there is a ton of information. And when I say hours worth of stuff, it's hours. So a lot of times I'm at work, I'm at my cubicle, and if I'm not too busy with a project, I can listen to these and just, like I said, it bothers me. But I want to say that this video and this, my discussion on this topic, is going to be for people like me who are not medical professionals. We are curious. We have that same bad feeling in our gut to say that, you know, something's not right with the mRNA distribution. And I will say that I'm not against vaccines, but I think that the specifically the mRNA distribution is the problem with this COVID-19 vaccine. They explain it to you a lot better than I do, they explain it a lot better than I can. So he's going to, in this particular video, I like this one because he physically sketches out how the mRNA interacts with our cells and what it's supposed to do. All this type of stuff, right? So this is the foundation of all of how the mRNA distribution works. And he does get into it about 10 minutes, 12 minutes into the video. But I want him to just go through the introduction so that you guys know who he is. And again, all of the things that he talks about. is down here in the description, where you have the website. He's going to go into the Therapeutic Goods Administration, which I think is an organization in Australia. And you guys can correct me on that. But all the links are here. The information is here. Everything that he talks about, you can look up the information, read the reports that are available. And I found that the longer that I listen to these discussions from the medical experts, the easier it is for me to understand what's going on, right? You get used to the medical terms as you go. But this is a good starting point for me, because the videos I saw before this, I was like, didn't quite understand what was going on and how the mRNA is distributed. But when he went through with the little hand sketches, even though they're rough, then I visually saw and could understand, okay, this is what's going on. And this is what's causing, potentially causing problems. Okay, so I'm going to go ahead and let this run for a little bit. And I don't think we're going to get through the whole thing, because I don't want this video to be that long, but I did want to just start you guys off with where I am and then where this is going, this discussion.
Well, a warm welcome to today's talk. It's Saturday the 25th of March, not May as I said yesterday. Now, I've been carrying on wading through this report here from the Therapeutic Goods Administration from Australia, the authorising body in Australia. And I've put the link to the full report, which is now in the public domain. When I say full report, it's not actually a full report. It's got some redacted sections, which, you know, given the information that's in this report and some of the stuff I'm about to reveal to you today, it just makes you wonder what is in the redacted content. It really.
Yeah, so this is from a year ago. Okay, just to let you guys know. So when he said March, this is March 2023. So it's about 10, 11 months ago.
Let's get straight down into some of the things that this report is saying. And remember, of course, this was submitted by the TGA in Australia based on Pfizer's information about the vaccines in January 2021. So when they were rolling out the very early stages of the vaccine program in the UK, all this information, we have to assume, was known by the UK authorities, and yet they still carried on with the vaccination program. We assume it was known by all of the US authorities as well, because it's basically information that's related to the vaccine. If the TGA has it, then I think we can assume that all the civilized countries in the world had it, New Zealand, Canada, all of Europe, and yet they ploughed on with this. And the thing that's really intolerable about this is we weren't told. If we'd known this at the time, things would have, information would have been processed differently, shall we say. But of course it didn't. Let's get straight on to the business. Page 4. Almost similar microscopic lung inflammation was observed in both challenge control and immunised animals, mackie monkeys, poor things, after the peak of infection, days 7 to 8. So these animals were deliberately infected. Now, what this is actually saying is that if animals were vaccinated or not, they still had minimal lung inflammation. And I think we can assume that they were inoculated with the Wuhan variety of the original variant of the virus. So in other words, what this is saying is somewhat obscure language. This is challenged with infection. So the virus was given to these poor monkeys and they were unvaccinated. And they had almost similar microscopic lung inflammation as opposed to those challenged with the virus that had been vaccinated. So we see that the lung inflammation in the vaccinated and unvaccinated was the same. Based on this, they decided that the vaccine was sufficiently efficacious to carry on with the vaccination program. Strange but true.
Okay, so that part I'm still confused on. The lung inflammation is the same when you're infected. with the Wuhan version of the strain, whether you're vaccinated or unvaccinated. So taking the vaccine didn't decrease the lung inflammation at all. If the vaccinated and unvaccinated are the same, I mean, I think that's weird. Well, I'm taking from it that there's no benefit to taking the vaccine if you're unvaccinated, especially if you're younger. You know, not taking it is, I mean, it's, you're not going to get that benefit from it. As far as lung inflammation goes, that's what I get from this. But yeah, that's weird. Why wouldn't the vaccine have an effect on lowering, like if you have lung inflammation, why wouldn't it have an effect on lowering that?
Page 4 again. There is no distribution and degradation data on the S, the spike antigen, encoding messenger ribonucleic acid, the mRNA. So they don't know where this goes, no distribution, and they don't know how long it lasts for. It doesn't degrade. Does it degrade in 5 minutes? Does it degrade in 5 years? Both of those are absurd, of course, but where does it fall between those? There isn't, there's no data. So the decision was made on no data. You couldn't.
Okay, so I'm going to just, like I said, we're probably not going to get through the whole thing, but I'll explain why he's so, because I've watched enough of these to understand what's going on now. When you give a vaccine, normally it stays in your system for a few hours, two hours, 3 hours, to maybe 2 days, 3 days. I mean, that's what I've gotten from it, right? When they give you the mRNA distribution, they don't know how long it lasts in your system. They don't know. There's no data on it. And also, when you're taking a normal vaccine, they are specifically giving you only a certain amount of a dosage, right? But with the mRNA distribution, they're not giving you a certain dosage of anything. They are basically telling your, they're distributing the mRNA to your cells, and your cells are deciding how much of the spike protein is going to produce. So it just depends on where the mRNA goes to how many cells, and then how many cells produce a spike protein. They don't know. So they don't know how much of the vaccine is going to, of this, you know, mRNA is going to be produced, how much of the spike protein is going to be produced, because there is no certain dosage. Like, there is no cutoff point to where the mRNA goes to a cell and says, okay, I've made enough spike protein, I'm going to stop. There's no guard for that, or no cutoff point for that. So that becomes a problem. So you don't know how much of the spike protein you're going to have, and you don't know how long it's going to last in your system. And when you take a normal vaccine, it usually stays at the injection point. That's where the majority of it stays when you take a normal vaccine. With the mRNA distribution, they thought it was going to do the same thing and stay at whatever the injection point was. Like, they put it in your arm, it was going to basically stay there, right? It doesn't stay there. After the fact, we're finding out that it's going systematically through your entire body, which is why people have a wide range of different effects, because your immune system is going to, everyone's immune system is not the same, so it's going to respond to the spike protein being generated differently. Yeah, it's a little bit of a mess.
So it's a new viral therapy that uses intracellular pathways to access the ribosomes in the cell. So this is what happens, of course. So here we have the cell. And on the cell, there's normally some, and in the cell, there's this endoplasmic reticulum, this network of membranes. And on here, there's it's called rough endoplasmic reticulum. This thing's called ribosomes. And these are the protein-making factories. So we assume that the RNA from the vaccine, there's the lipid nanoparticle there with the RNA, that goes into these ribosomes. The ribosomes make the protein, and that then exports this spike protein that sits on the surface of the cell. That's the way it's working. It's taking over these intracellular mechanisms. Now, we know from page... So that's how it's working, but they're not concerned that they don't know where it's going and how long it's lasting for. See, if this RNA lasts for a few hours, as we were originally told, and then this spike protein goes again after a few hours, the damage would probably be minimal. Or is it longer than that? Well, don't know, mate. Sorry, we don't know that. And we know from page 45 that the lipid nanoparticles are systemically distributed. So we looked yesterday. This is the systemic distribution of the lipid nanoparticles. It goes basically all around the body, in the blood, brain, eyes, heart, kidneys, large intestine, liver, lungs, testis, ovaries. It basically goes all around the body. So we know that the lipid nanoparticles go all around the body. And assuming that this document has internal validity, it's not contradicting itself, we're assuming that the spike protein that the RNA produces, distribution is not tested. So we know where the lipid nanoparticles go, everywhere. But having known that the lipid nanoparticles go everywhere, they didn't bother testing to see where the mRNA goes or where the spike protein produced by the mRNA goes. This is quite incredible.
Okay. So the way I've swallowed this is that the nanopods are basically carrying the RNA to your cells. They're just using nanopods. I don't know what a nanopod is, but that it just seems like you put the RNA into a pod, it carries it to the cell, the RNA goes into your cells, the ribosomes produce the spike protein, which bubbles up on the surface of your cells. When a spike protein bubbles up on the surface of your cells, your immune system sees it as a foreign object and attacks the spike protein because it's not supposed to be there. And so what the doctors, scientists are trying to do with this vaccine is that when the spike protein is developed on the surface of your cells, your immune system will learn to recognize the spike protein and get rid of it. So then if you get sick from whomever with COVID-19, and your immune system will recognize the spike protein and say, oh, this is how we're supposed to attack this particular thing, invader or foreigner, or however they call it. They call it like a foreign cell. It's just not supposed to be there. So anything that's not supposed to be there, your immune system attacks it. But he's going to go into why this is going to be a problem. Like, he showed you a list of the nanopods are carrying the RNA everywhere in your body. He's going to show why that's a huge problem.
But given that the lipid nanoparticles go everywhere, I think we have to assume that the mRNA and the consequent spike protein produced by the mRNA goes everywhere. So what's happening, if you have, that's the cell there, let's just have a bit of a blow up of a cell there. There we have the cell. And this could be a cell in your toe, in your heart, in your brain, in your arm, it could be anywhere. And here's the lipid nanoparticle. Now the thing about the lipids is that the cell membrane is made of lipids, it's a phospholipid bilayer. And so these two just sort of merge together because they're both lipids, a bit like bubbles. And that means that the RNA can get into the cell. And that once the RNA is into the cell, as we say, it goes to these ribosomes on the endoplasmic reticulum, and they'll produce the protein. So given that this is the cell membrane is a lipid here, And given that, and all cell membranes are lipids, all cells are the same. So the cells in your arm, for example, the fatty cell membrane on the muscle cells in the arm, the fatty material there is essentially the same, phospholipid bilayer, as it is in, say, the vascular endothelium, in a coronary artery, for example, or in a cerebral artery. These lipid nanoparticles aren't smart. Given that they're systemically distributed, we have to assume that this stuff goes everywhere, but they didn't bother testing for it. No data on how long the spike protein, once this makes the spike protein, so this makes the spike protein here, this goes to the surface of the cell, like that. How long that stays there, we don't know, because what happens is the immune system, the immune cells, will recognize this. For example, a lymphocyte there might recognize this. And that'll stimulate the immunological response, which is good. But of course, because it's foreign, it also stimulates inflammatory changes. And we can get inflammation, which of course we don't want in places like the brain or the heart. But anyway, they didn't test on the...
And that's the problem. The inflammation. When your immune system starts attacking foreign cells or something that's not supposed to be there, like this... The RNA is triggering your cells everywhere to create the spike protein. So when your immune system goes to attack that object that's not supposed to be there on your cell, the spike protein, it causes inflammation. But if you start having inflammation in your brain, in your heart, whatever, that's not good, you know, and that's how you have the myocarditis, because your immune system is doing what it's designed to do, but it's not supposed to do that in your brain, around your heart, like that type of thing, right? That's bad. And it also goes to the point where how many of these spike proteins are produced? They don't know. How long are the spike proteins produced? Like for hours, days, weeks? They don't know. So if you go for 2-3 weeks and your body is constantly still producing spike protein for your immune system to attack, and you're generating all this inflammation, you see where you come up with problems. You have young people having heart attacks because of the amount of inflammation that's going on in their bloodstream. And like he said, the RNA isn't smart. It doesn't know to create spike protein here, but not here. It just sees a cell and it goes there. That's just what it is. The nanoparticles are just designed to do that, to link with your cells. So, and they didn't, and as this report is saying from last year, this is the January 2021 report. They didn't test it, but this is the time when the vaccine mandates were going out. So they had this information, they digested this information, and then they created the mandates anyway without thinking that this was a problem. I don't know. But
gradation or the distribution data. And based on that lack of evidence, the vaccines were authorized. Page 5. Antibodies and T cells in monkeys declined quickly over 5 weeks. So the antibodies and these protective T cells, remember these T lymphocytes, these small lymphocytes, how long did this last for? Well, they declined quickly over 5 weeks. 5 weeks? What, 7 fives, 35 days? Yeah.
So yeah, just to simplify that even more, that's how long the vaccine is effective. over a span of 5 weeks, it declined quickly. So you're taking this much risk for that short of a term in terms of protection. I mean, so to me, I just feel like unless you're 65 and older, I mean, I wouldn't take this risk. I mean, the thing would be to try to boost your immune system as best you can. Because your immune system is going to do what it's designed to do, right? Whenever it sees something foreign come in, whenever you get flu or whatever, your immune system kicks in. And as I'm looking through all this stuff and I'm learning about all this stuff, I didn't know our immune systems were so complex, but they are. But he's going to show it on here better than I can tell you.
Raising concerns over long-term immunity. So the report specifically says this raises concerns over long-term immunity. Having raised concerns over long-term immunity, the vaccines were authorized by the TGA. And as we say, presumably all the other agencies. Page 6. A few unknowns were identified by the Therapeutic Goods Administration. Short-term protection studies only. That means long-term, who knows? Because these were only short-term studies. But we do know the protection was declining after 5 weeks. Lack of pharmacokinetic data for the S antigen encoding mRNA. So in pharmacology, basically, there's two terms. There's pharmacodynamics. Pharmacodynamics is the way a drug affects the body. Pharmacokinetics is the way that the body affects the drug. So, for example, if you drink alcohol, you should probably excrete about 1 unit of that alcohol per hour. That's the kinetics, the pharmacokinetics of alcohol. What's the pharmacokinetics? How does the body break down the S antigen encoding messenger RNA? Not tested, basically. Lack of knowledge on that. Based on that, they authorize the mass administration of the vaccines.
Wait a minute. So we understand how our bodies break down alcohol, but we don't know how it's going to break down the RNA they've injected. I mean, they read all this stuff. They researched all this stuff before they approved this mass distribution.
Intervals in the repeat dose study, genotoxicity with novel excipients. So genotoxicity, how is this affecting the genes? Now, these excipients, an excipient is a substance formulated along the active ingredient, alongside the active ingredient, included in the preparation. And excipients can do various useful things. But were these excipients affecting, for example, were they having a toxic effect on the genetic material? Well, I don't know, because genotoxicity wasn't done. Not done. Lack of studies investigating potential for autoimmune disease were noted. So the potential for autoimmune disease was noted, but not studied. So the thing is,
wait a minute, before he gets in this part, because this part is like unbelievable. But so their research said that autoimmune disease could be a problem with this mRNA distribution. They just noted it, but they didn't say anything to us about that this could potentially cause or turn into an autoimmune disease because of how the RNA is distributed. They just noted it. They like put it as a little side note, like, yeah, this could be a problem.
If you have a cell that's expressing foreign protein, foreign protein, wherever that cell is, if a cell's expressing foreign protein, what can happen is a T cell, for example, a T cytotoxic cell, can come along and kill the whole cell. That would be autoimmunity. Basically, we don't want our own cells to be eradicated, but in autoimmune disease, they are. So, for example, type 1 diabetes is essentially an autoimmune disease. So in type 1 diabetes, there is autoimmune. Your own immune system basically eradicates your own beta cells in the pancreatic islets of Langerhans. And it's the beta cells that produce the insulin. So if your immune system's beat up and eradicated all of your own beta cells from the pancreatic islets, how are you going to produce insulin? Well, the answer is you're not. Therefore, you'll have an absolute deficiency of insulin. It's insulin that lowers blood sugar levels, so blood sugar goes up, amongst other complications that occur in diabetes. So, but autoimmune disease. I'm on the wrong one. Lack of studies investigating the potential of autoimmune disease, I noted. So, having noted the deficiency, noted the lack of data, you see, we were told at the time, and I took, this is what really grates on me, I took all these senior scientists at their word. I took the Joint Committee on Vaccination and Immunisation at their word. Because they said everything that is normally done was done. They told us that. And at the time we knew we couldn't know all of that. The papers probably weren't published. But now we find out there's the studies lacked investigation into potential autoimmune disease.
Okay. So he says now we find this out, right? This paper was put together in January 2021. He's reading this paper, this research paper, in March of 2023. So it's over 2 years later that he's getting this information and sharing it with us or his community, the people who follow him. Over 2 years later. And during all that time, the scientists actually knew all these things and nobody said anything about any of this stuff. And now you have people suing private businesses and suing governments overseas, all this type of stuff. And now all of a sudden you slowly see all of this information start to trickle out. But it's not being, you know, this information is not being shared like widespread, you know, I would say. So again, part of this is just me helping to raise awareness.
If we've been told this at the time, then my videos could have been different. The behavior of the world could have been different. Why weren't we told? A few more. Page 6. Still unknowns. Long-term immunity, don't know, wasn't done. Not studied for long enough. Vaccine-induced autoimmune disease were not studied in the non-clinical program. Go, page 8. Vaccine, Pfizer vaccine, immunization also included pro-inflammatory cytokines. So you know that we know cytokines now probably. Cytokines are chemicals released by one cell that affects another cell. Some of them promote inflammation, some of them reduce inflammation. The vaccine here, we're told, produces pro-inflammatory cytokines, so it increases inflammation. Again, we weren't told that in January 2021. The information was there in
January. Wait a minute. The cytokines that he just brought up, there's two different types. Some increase inflammation, some reduce inflammation. The type that they put as part of the vaccine increases inflammation. That makes no sense. And he just said that, like, we weren't told that part at all. So you see, like, it just... It's not good. So I look at this entire thing like we were treated as guinea pigs, right? And now, mind you, that the pharmaceutical companies made sure that before the government purchased millions of dollars worth of vaccines, that they're going to be free of all liability. Like if something goes wrong, you can't sue Pfizer, you can't sue Moderna. I think that's a part of the contract, if I'm not mistaken, and you guys can correct me on that. But this is why, and that's why they can take all these shortcuts. And you don't have any data, any research on any of these important aspects of what you usually do to test vaccines. They just didn't test it. So now they can make all the money. There's no accountability for them. And people who do have problems, it's not really being covered or looked into. So it's wow.
Very 2021, but we weren't told by any of our regulatory authorities. The TGA didn't report it to the Australian people. The Food and Drug Administration, CDC lot, didn't report it to the American people. The various regulatory authorities in the UK. If they reported it, I did. I missed it. Anyway, let's carry on. So pro-inflammatory effects. Now, page 9. One study found that among people who'd recovered from COVID-19, 100% had S-protein-specific CD4 cells. Now, these CD4 cells are the T helper lymphocytes. So with lymphocytes, the small lymphocytes can be B. So these are the lymphocytes. These blood cells, and they can be T, or they can be B. The T mature in the thymus, the B mature in the bone marrow. The T can be helpers, which are that's those ones, the CD4 plus, they have a CD4 receptor. The T cells can be cytotoxic. Cytotoxic. CYTO, and spelling's gone to pot, never mind. Well, they can be suppressors. Suppressor cells. Now, the helper cells are essential because the helper cells, what the helper cells do is they stimulate the B cells, and it's the B cells that produce the antibodies. Billions of them. Immune proteins, the immunoglobulins. So one study found that among people who had recovered from COVID-19, this is natural infection, 100%, absolutely every single one of the subjects had S-protein-specific CD4 T cells that would instruct the B cells to make the antibodies. So they knew that natural immunity produced a helper T cell response in 100% of recipients. And also, their studies showed in the circulation, 70% had the protein-specific CD8 plus cell. Now, the CD8 plus cell is the cytotoxics, these cytotoxic cells. So the cytotoxic cells, as we've said, if a cell is infected with the virus, so here's the viruses in here, taking over and reproducing inside the cells. Then what the cytotoxic cell does is it chucks a hand grenade in and kills the whole cell. It actually drops toxic chemicals on it, kills the whole cell. But of course, then it kills the viruses as well. Very, very effective. And 70% of subjects had that. So in other words, natural immunity was going to be producing antibodies in 100% of subjects. 100% of subjects. And cytotoxic cells identified in 70%. And yet autoimmunity... I was looking at, natural immunity. Natural immunity was not mentioned, as far as I can recall, in any of the press conferences from Downing Street with a chief scientific and chief medical officer.
Okay. hold on. And we're almost done. I didn't want this to be this long, but it's just... It's like mind blowing. It's like I get it, because I mean this is why human beings have been able to survive on planet Earth for so long. our immune system is very adaptable, and it can, when we get that, the T helper cells, they basically trigger the B cells to create a specific type of whatever specific type of antibody we need. It'll trigger the B cells to create those. And everybody has an immune system. That's how all of our immune systems work. Now, some of our immune systems are stronger than others. This is why the elderly who have a weaker immune system are more susceptible to passing away, to dying from something like COVID, right? But we all have an immune system. The younger people, younger generation, your immune system is stronger. And children, their immune system generally, I believe, is stronger than like middle-aged adults. So your immune system is adaptable. When, and this is something that I just learned like yesterday, when we have booster shots, the boosters are only targeting a certain COVID-19 variant, right? They just target a specific variant. Like Omicron, for example. People aren't dying from Omicron because, even like, say you're unvaccinated, your T cells are going to trigger your B cells to create antibodies specifically for the Omicron variant. And every time the variant mutates into something else, your T cells are going to trigger your B cells to create the specific type of antibodies you need for whatever you've just gotten sick with. So an unvaccinated person doesn't need to keep taking a different booster. Your immune system is going to adjust on its own. Like that's just how our immune systems are designed, to adjust to whatever is going to be attacked with, right? So the first time around that you get something like the Wuhan variant, yes, you can get very sick because, like, more so than not, your immune system has never identified something or fought something off like this before. So, and the Wuhan variant was also the strongest variant out of all the mutations that have happened after that. So we get infected with the Wuhan variant in 2020, and then all the variants after that, more times than not, they're more infectious, but they're not as severe as far as getting like middle-aged people sick, children sick, things like that. And then by that time, our immune system readily recognizes that, and we have memory cells, and he can explain this better, but cells, they remember that, okay, this foreign object has been here before. We know how to attack this. So your immune system's like instead of having a regular TV, like you have a smart television, we have a smart immune system. Like our immune system is just that complex. And it, like I said, it'll adjust. So I think that I would have skipped, because some countries did skip the mRNA distribution. I think China skipped it. Maybe Russia skipped it. Like they have a normal, they didn't use the mRNA distribution type of vaccine. They use a different, they just use a regular type where wherever you inject it, it's basically going to stay there and not travel through your entire bloodstream. So I think they use a different one. But for us here in the States, Canada, et cetera, the mRNA distribution, it changes how your immune system responds because it only targets a specific variant, which is why if you have the Wuhan variant and you take an Omicron booster, the Omicron booster is not really going to do much of anything to the Wuhan variant. It's two different things. And that's not how your immune system is supposed to work. So now you have a weaker response to a different variant because the booster that you took isn't for that specific variant. And now we're finding out that the virus is still mutating. I think we're on GN1 now or something like this. It's crazy. But anyway, I'll get into that later. But point being is that, yes, you have certain groups in our population that should take a vaccine for it. Everyone else, your immune system, keep it as strong as you possibly can. Learn what you can eat and what you shouldn't eat to keep your immune system strong. And then when different variants are floating around, your immune system is strong enough to fight them off, right? And again, that's how the human race has been able to last for centuries, because our immune system can adjust. It does adjust. As long as they don't create something that's just like incredibly terrible and our immune system doesn't have time to adjust, then that's bad. But for the most part, natural instances, but for the at least the past 100 years or so, I don't think it's been that much of a problem. And now being 2024, I don't see it getting worse unless, you know, like I said, they're still doing like gain of function research and then something leaks out or whatever. But anyway, this particular shot right here on screen, I was amazed. And then with the research, the data that they do have, 100% of the people, their immune system worked like it was supposed to, and it created the antibodies on its own. So this was basically a money grab by the pharmaceutical companies. And they put a lot of money into the research of the mRNA distribution. They want to make that money back. And I think it led to them charging the U.S. government like 130% above what it actually costs for the company to make the vaccine. They made a lot of money from this, but again, no accountability. And, now things are going wrong. No one's asking questions. And then we had this research over 2 years before, this particular video or this particular, the doctor created this particular video. So like I said, this paper came out January 2021. He's getting his hands on it in March 2023. I'm showing it to you guys now, and we're in February 2024. That's how slow this is going as far as awareness goes. So let me see if I can finish this up.
And cytotoxic cells identified in 70%, and yet autoimmunity. I was looking at, natural immunity. Natural immunity was not mentioned, as far as I can recall, in any of the press conferences from Downing Street with the chief scientific and chief medical officer. Natural immunity has just basically not been mentioned. It was all vaccines.
And I'm sorry to cut him off, but why is that the case? That's the case because you can't make money off of natural immunity. The pharmaceutical companies can't make their money back. All the money they threw into the mRNA research, they can't make that money back. And then people are getting on TV talking about natural immunity. Strengthen your own immune system for the most part, for most of the population. The elderly, yes, we're going to have to, you know, and people who have certain conditions, yes, we're going to have to do something special for them. But everybody else, build up your own immune system. Here's what you do to do that. And then when you get sick, okay, right? I mean, that's what it sounds like to me. Now, if you guys have a different opinion on it, definitely leave your thoughts in the comments.
What about natural immunity? Especially as we got onto the age of Omicron. Why were the authorities essentially silent on natural immunity? And shall we say somewhat vocal on vaccination? Surely it would have been good to have natural immunity as well, especially as this study showed how incredibly effective it was. So there we go. Lots of things that weren't known, lots of things about the vaccine that were simply ignorant about, lots of things that were known that, for example, it was pro-inflammatory, lots of studies that weren't done. Natural immunity demonstrated to be incredibly effective. All this was known in the first month or two of the vaccine rollout in the UK. In the United States, January 2021, that's when the vaccine rollout started. All this information was known at that time. Some of you might think there's questions to answer. Right, I'm going to leave that there before I get too cross. On a lighter note, you might have seen a new addition today. This is from...
Okay, so that's the end of the discussion that he has. You'll see that little statue there over here. You can barely see it in the window. One of his viewers actually made him a model, like a sculpture of himself and his dog. So that's definitely on a lighter note there. So you see the little puppy down here. But yeah, so my head hurts, thinking about all this, but I'm hoping that it is beneficial to you. There are definitely more, videos I want to share, more discussions that I want to have, but this is the beginning one. This is the first one that I wanted to start with because of the... I don't think in too many more of these discussions he's going to actually sketch out on paper like how the distribution of the mRNA works. So this is basically the foundation of everything. And so now that we understand that the mRNA is distributed throughout our system, bloodstream, we're going to go into the problems that it causes, and there's quite a few problems. And on the surface, I think that people will say, "Well, the vaccine or what we got saved lives," and then, it's not as crystal clear as that. And so I just didn't want to get on here and have a rant about hesitancy, but I really do want to share with you all the talks, the discussions that I'm finding from the people who are doctors in the medical industry, and they've done 20, 30 years of work on this. I mean, they're veterans, right? So they're surprised about this. So I guess I'll leave off with, like, you might say, well, how come more doctors haven't come out about stuff like this? And that's because people are losing their licenses to treat people. There have been too many doctors who have come out against the mRNA distribution, and they have lost their license. Or the hospital has tried to make them lose their practice. So no one wants to lose their job. No one. No one wants to lose their job. Everyone wants to get their grants. And if you don't fall in line with what the medical institutions have outlined as the truth, then if you don't fall in line, then your career is definitely in danger. But I feel like right now, even the fact that YouTube is allowing content like this to be, you know, to stay on their servers, you know, and distributed, I think people are a little bit more comfortable right now of talking about all of this, but it's still not where it needs to be. So I will continue to look at this, and when I watch even, you know, like local news or whatever, like none of this information is on there at all, so it's just not talked about. So I definitely think it's a discussion that needs to be widespread, international, and that's the only way that we can get to the bottom of this is put all the information on the table and see, what's really going on. So thank you for sitting with me through this, and I hope that you can watch it, rewatch it, learn, do your own research. The paper that Dr. Campbell mentioned is there. It's the Therapeutic Goods Administration, which is a governing body in Australia, much like the CDC in the US, the FDA in the US. They have the TGA, so. But yeah, the research is there, or lack thereof is there. The information that we have and don't have is there from January 2021. So if you like digging into things like I do, then it's there, it's available. So I really appreciate it. You guys taking the time out to sit through all this, and see you next time. Take care.